Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Pocket Limp Podcast. I'm Rick Henderson and I'm hosting this special edition version of the podcast, as all this week PocketLimp.com has been celebrating PC Gaming Week in association with NVIDIA GeForce RTX. The podcast will therefore focus primarily on PC gaming, including the technology and games themselves. And to that end, I'll be joined by contributing editors Adrian Willins and Luke Baker, both Pocket Linters who have a deep love and understanding of the subject. We'll find out their thoughts on the current state of PC gaming, a few tips on what to consider if you're starting out with a gaming rig, and later some of their favourite PC games. I'll also be speaking with Seth Schneider, GeForce Product Manager at NVIDIA and esports competitor, to find out why higher frame rates and DLSS are revolutionising competitive gaming. But first, back to Adrian and Luke. Adrian, let's start with you. Tell us a bit more about Pocket Limp's PC Gaming Week and why PC gaming itself is on the rise of late.
Well, this week we've been writing a lot of different stories about PC gaming in all sorts of ways. And I think over the last couple of years, probably starting when everyone was in lockdown, we've noticed a rise in the number of people that are interested in PC gaming and in building their own machines as well. So we've been looking at a lot of things around, tips around building your own machine and how to get the most out of it and what you should upgrade and things to think about before you do all that. I think people were stuck at home and realised that perhaps their laptop or desktop machine that they were using wasn't quite up to scratch for work purposes, and then perhaps thought about upgrading to get into a bit of gaming and, you know, have some escapism after they've finished a working day. I know I need to do that. So, and we've just been writing a lot of different things about that and all the different considerations that come with it and all the things along that line. And a lot of the big brands have also got into a lot of streaming gear. So we've seen a rise in things and peripherals from Corsair and Razer and other companies like that, delivering a lot more in terms of cameras and lights and things around streaming, because a lot more people are getting into that as well. So we've written things around building your own PC, but also streaming, capturing game footage, all sorts of things that will be useful, hopefully, to people that are looking to do that.
Right, Luke, if you're a beginner and you want to get into PC gaming, maybe you've been playing on a PlayStation or an Xbox all this time, but you're actually more interested in the PC side of things, should you consider a desktop or a laptop gaming device?
I think there's advantages to both. I normally push people towards getting a desktop simply because when it gets outdated, you can just upgrade individual components. So yeah, if you need more storage, you can just chuck some more storage in, whereas in a laptop, that's sometimes quite a difficult task to get that to work. But on the other hand, a laptop is more portable, obviously, and you don't have to buy a bunch of peripherals to get it to work. You don't need to buy a screen and a keyboard and a mouse and everything. It's all built in to one simple device, although you probably still want a mouse, to be honest. Yeah, so it depends on the individual, but desktops give the most flexibility.
I've also noticed, Adrian, that gaming laptops are becoming thinner and thinner of late. They've become so that you can actually double them up. You don't have to just game on them. You can use them just as a normal computer when you're on your travels. But does the correlation between how thin they are and their gaming prowess, is there a diversity, a dichotomy there?
I think that historically there has been an issue with them being thinner, where they run hotter, so they end up thermal throttling, which then reduces the performance. But NVIDIA's been working on battery boost technology and a whisper mode and various other technologies that account for those sorts of things and keep it cooler and more effective, and also the companies that produce them. So I know Asus, for example, and the laptops I've seen over the last couple of years have worked to improve the thermal performance of their laptops, so they're not actually as hot and they run a bit better and a bit more effectively. And Intel's working on producing a number of things that let the CPU and GPU cross talk a bit more, and so improve performance there as well. So I think they are getting better. I still think you get better performance out of a desktop machine because it has better airflow and can naturally have bigger components in terms of the graphics card and things. But yeah, I think they're getting there.
I know you build your own machines. Would you advise someone starting out to actually consider building their own PC, or should they really be looking to get one off the shelf?
Historically, I think it was cheaper to build them yourself. I don't think that's necessarily the same anymore. You can get a lot of pre-built systems, which are obviously easier to just purchase off the shelf. But there is a lot to be said for building it yourself. It's a lot of fun. It's very rewarding and satisfying to come up with that when you finish with it at the end. And obviously you can select the parts in a bit more of a granular way, choosing what you want to go in there and how you're going to put it together. And obviously we have some comprehensive guides on how to do it, so it's not that intimidating once you start looking for advice on it. And I think it's, I saw a thing online saying, how do you do this, how do you build a PC, and it was just referencing, you know, putting Lego together or something like that when you're a kid. It's actually a lot easier than you think it is, because a lot of the parts are designed so that you can't put them in the wrong way around, and it's just, it's quite simple really.
Luke, what do I need to look for if I was when choosing accessories to go with the PC, whether it be a laptop or a desktop? Obviously accessories are a big deal in the PC gaming field.
I think the answer to that depends a lot on the type of games that you want to play. So, for example, people who are really into competitive shooting games tend to like really lightweight mice, and there's loads of mice on the market that have hollowed out sections to keep the weight as low as possible so you can flick it around as fast as possible. Whereas people who are more interested in games like World of Warcraft want loads of programmable macro keys on everything. So you'll find keyboards and mice that have a bunch of programmable buttons that can do essentially whatever you want. And those buttons could be useful for streamers as well. So if you want to stream your gameplay, it's the more buttons, the better, really. Whereas people are purely interested in, like, Overwatch and CSGO don't need that many buttons. They just want the highest performing simple device they can get, really.
All right, I think my final question is back to Adrian, is what should, if I'm a complete novice and I'm about to get into it, what should my minimum budget be?
Oh wow, that's a tough one, isn't it? That's a tough question. You know, I don't think I've budgeted a rig for a while, but someone asked me the other day and showed one they put together. So there's a website called PC Part Picker, which is really handy for selecting all the parts that you want and how to put, whether they'll fit together or not. It's really straightforward. So you just select, let's say, the CPU that you want, and then it will recommend the compatible motherboards and all the other bits that go with it, so you can't buy the wrong parts. And I think theirs came out to about just under £2,000. Which is actually really reasonable for a current modern PC gaming machine. And I think that would probably serve them well. And if you want top end, you could end up spending a lot more than that, significantly more. I think you're probably looking at about $2,000 or $3,000 if you want something that's going to last. And that's obviously quite a big investment. But, you know, like Luke said, they're easy to upgrade over time. So you can pick and choose, maybe start with less RAM and upgrade that in future, or just one NVMe SSD, for example, and then add more storage in later on. So you can sort of have a reasonable budget and then add to it in future rather than splashing it all out in the beginning. So
I was just going to say, when I built my first PC, I couldn't afford a graphics card at the time. I think you've written something about this recently, Adrian. But so I just built a system with no graphics card, and it could run some games, very low spec games. But then, you know, 6 months later or whatever, when I could afford a graphics card, I just popped it in and carried on, but playing games at a higher spec and having more fun.
I feel a lot happier, no doubt, as well.
Later in the show, Adrian and Luke will return to talk more about the PC games themselves, and will reveal their favourites. But before then, I recently got the chance to speak with NVIDIA GeForce product manager Seth Schneider, who is also an accomplished esports player, about the different technologies that are increasingly improving gameplay experiences and competitive gameplay in the PC field. I started by asking him to explain why higher frame rates are so important to gamers.
If we look at the gaming experience, we can really break it up into two different, you know, exponential pieces in gaming. There is smoothness and there is responsiveness. And frame rate has really enabled both over the history of gaming. A higher FPS experience gives you that level of smoothness that makes the motion within the game extremely fluid. And it also brings a level of responsiveness that makes your inputs turn into pixels on screen in a timely manner, giving you that immersion and that feeling of being really connected to your game. So the higher the FPS, really the better. The more immersion, the more connected, the more responsive, the smoother the game's going to be. So it's extremely important for gamers.
I mean, we've seen actually in recent times that this has become more and more important, mainly because the technology is catching up and the developers are being able to use it. Can you explain any of the more recent developments that have really helped attain much higher frame rates? I mean, we're talking about even above 120 FPS.
Yeah, there's a number of ways to get higher FPS. You know, there's software techniques. There's obviously faster hardware. You know, our latest line of GPUs enables extremely high frame rates. You know, I'm an esports competitive gamer, and so, you know, we're targeting frame rates up now above 360 FPS, where in Valorant we're rendering frames in, you know, fractions of a millisecond, which is pretty cool. And then on the other side of the house, even with ray traced content, we're able to render extremely high frame rates with technologies like DLSS or deep learning super sampling. It's a super resolution technology that uses AI to effectively up-res your images in order to give you a rendering rate at a lower resolution, giving you much higher frame rate than what's ever been possible before. So it's a really great technology. We're leaning into it, giving you, you know, basically free FPS, so more smoothness, more responsiveness at ISO quality, or even sometimes at better quality.
I mean, that's cool. The other thing is, as an esports player, you'd appreciate and probably be able to answer this better, is there seems to have been a trade-off in the past between resolution and frame rate. Would you say that you would prefer a higher frame rate or resolution, or do you think technologies such as DLSS are helping to achieve something of a good, happy medium?
You know, I think, especially in the games I play, I think you can get both these days. You know, I think that trade-off used to be more in the past, to be honest. Like, I play esports on 1440p now, to be honest. With, you know, the refresh rates have gotten high enough, and at this point GPUs are powerful enough to hit those, you know, 360 FPS in top esports games, even at resolutions like 1440p. And to be honest, I'd go to 4K if the refresh rates were higher. And so, you know, and technologies like DLSS are making that trade-off basically a no-brainer as well. And so, you know, while you know, with less GPU power, I think there is certainly a trade-off, and I think that's why we see most players go towards 1080p in order to get the FPS first. But now with the GPU power that's available to gamers and the technologies like DLSS and Reflex that we have, going higher resolution isn't really a trade-off anymore. It makes a sharper image, and we can obtain the frame rates that are high enough to power our competitive experiences. I think it's kind of a no-brainer.
Do you think non-pro PC gamers and sort of like those less involved in competition also can reap the benefits?
Absolutely. You know, we actually just did a really interesting latency study, which, you know, is one of the benefits of higher FPS is lower latency, with our partnership with Kovacs Aim Trainer. Are you familiar with Kovacs Aim Trainer?
Yeah.
Yeah, so within Kovacs, we did something called the System Latency Challenge. But really what it was a big research study where we built some technology that could manage the amount of latency per experiment. And we put people through three different experiments at 25 milliseconds, 55 milliseconds, 85 milliseconds, and saw how they performed with their aiming performance at each of those levels. And what's interesting is that it turned out that the players that scored in the bottom 25th percentile of the score, so, you know, you could say the less skilled players, actually had a bigger improvement going from high latency to low latency than even the top players did. And if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense because really highly skilled players have practiced a long time. They have muscle memory. They know how to do a flick and basically what it feels like on their mouse pad. But for less experienced or less skilled players, they use their sensory inputs, their eyes, you know, the where the cursor is in relationship to the target to really be able to aim. And that lower latency is going to help them be able to make that immediate connection and not have to rely on all that training in the past. And so what we're finding is that, higher frame rate and lower latency probably actually matters more for non-pros than actually pros. So it's a pretty cool phenomenon.
Speaking of latency, NVIDIA has technology called Reflex. How does that work to keep latency down to a minimum?
Yeah. Reflex is a very interesting piece of technology. It's been my life for the last couple of years, which has been great as an esports guy. How it works is we basically line up all of the work that happens within the game and the game submission of work to the GPU to happen just in time. So not only are we allowing the CPU to basically submit render calls to the GPU just in time for the GPU to be able to render it, that way it's basically not waiting in a line or a queue, but we also help organize the CPU side such that the simulation is handing off to render submission and the render submission is handing off to the driver, all is basically as fluidly as possible without any gaps or stalls. This is why we need a game integration, and this is why it does so much better than a lot of the driver-only solutions. Like, we have a driver-only solution called the ultra-low latency mode in the driver, and we can reduce the GPU queue. However, with Reflex, we're able to reduce latency on the CPU side, within the game, within the driver, and, of course, the submission to the GPU in the render queue. So it's pretty cool. We basically take all the slop out of the pipeline, and we're able to see some pretty great latency improvements. Oftentimes, in really heavily GPU-bound situations, sometimes we'll see latency get cut in half. For software optimization, that's pretty awesome.
What type of games benefit best out of having higher frame rates?
Yeah, basically, with higher frame rates and lower latency, kind of the way I think about it is any game that relies on the user to be responsive or the gamer to be responsive, think a platform or a fighting game, or obviously a first-person shooter or a racing game, those are games that are going to benefit more. A tabletop gamer like, you know, Civilization, obviously frame rate and latency aren't as important. You know, in Hearthstone, I don't necessarily need 10 milliseconds of latency to put a card down. But, you know, if I'm driving in F1 or if, I'm playing Counter-Strike or, I'm doing a platformer, I want to make sure my jump timings are great. Or even games, you know, like Elden Ring, it's great if I can roll dodge, right? I don't need to get, you know, slammed by Margit a number of times. That's a bummer. And so it's really higher FPS and lower latency are going to matter in any game that really requires a lot of quick interactions or really any interactivity. Helps with the immersion.
One thing that I've always considered about PC gaming in comparison, say, to console, is that one person's rig will be completely different to somebody else's. Mm-hmm. Is there a massive disparity between somebody having a very high-end PC playing against somebody with a more entry-level rig?
Yes and no. You know, it's think about it like driving. You can take, you know, you can take the best driver in the world and put them inside of a, you know, a Toyota Camry, and they'll probably beat an average driver even if they're driving a Formula One car. There's still a lot of, you know, your player skill still really determines how well you're going to do in these competitive games. You know, you see people go out there with, you know, 60 FPS in competitive games and absolutely slay it because they're extremely talented. Now, going back to that analogy, if you put that same professional driver in a Formula One car, hey, they're going to be going a lot faster than what they were doing, even though they could beat you in either car. And so it's, you can kind of think of it like that. It's player skills, obviously your capabilities are what's going to be the most important factor. However, with a better rig, it's going to unlock your capabilities. You're not going to be handicapped. And so, if the player skill is equal, then of course the person with the better rig is going to have an advantage. But player skill absolutely still matters. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It certainly does. I also remember being at the launch event for the first RTX cards. And ray tracing was very first touted. It took a while to start to get into gaming. Are we now seeing developers being able to appreciate and add ray tracing in a way where the NVIDIA really envisaged to begin with?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for a number of reasons. You know, they have a bit of experience with it now, and so we're starting to see ray tracing. It's less of an add-in feature and more of just that's part of the ultra quality settings. You know, pretty much any AAA game that's coming out now is looking at ray tracing being part of what makes the settings the best settings they can be. And technologies like DLSS are making ray tracing accessible for more users because of the perf. They can you know, get a good 60 frames per second, so developers are more likely to go out and implement ray tracing features. Additionally, there's a lot more hardware out in the market that support, you know, DirectX ray tracing, and with that, developers go, it's a worthwhile thing to do. And really, this is just the natural progression. It's like when programmable shaders happened a number of years, you know, a long time ago now. But there was kind of this switch from fixed function to programmable shaders. This is the same thing that's happening with DirectX ray tracing. This is just the next evolution in computer graphics. It's a huge leap. But, you know, we're seeing it move towards there. And, you know, I think the next step is fully path traced, too. So I'm excited for that.
Wow! Yeah,
so I think we're just on the cusp of greatness here, I think.
And finally, for those just getting into PC gaming, what's the most important thing to look for in a graphics card and monitor?
Oh, that's a great question. There's many things to consider when looking for a graphics card today. I would definitely look deeper than, you know, what is the FPS it can do in a 3D benchmark. Really, when you're buying into a graphics card and a monitor today, you're buying into a platform. You're buying into what is the driver quality? What is the software capabilities that can offer you? What is the guarantee that when I download a game day zero that my features are supported, that I can go and have that best experience out of the box? So when you're looking at buying a GPU and a monitor, you want to make sure that how you want to play is going to be supported and you're not going to be limited. And so I would definitely encourage folks to, you know, not just look at the FPS score, even though that's an incredibly important part of GPU, but look at it as a holistic platform and buy into that piece of it. I think it's incredibly important.
Now back to Pocket Lint's own Adrian and Luke as we turn our attention to the games themselves. After all, a PC gaming rig is only as good as the game. So with that in mind, what are the best games people can buy right now and what will give their PC a decent workout? Luke, let's start with your choice. What's your favourite PC game for running on your machine right now?
it's a bit of a classic now, but it's got to be GTA 5, I think. It's like stood the test of time and only got better and better as GTA Online has evolved into almost a completely different game than it was when it released, however long ago that was. But yeah, it's one of the first games I always boot up because you can really test the performance of a machine with that. And it's fun.
And Adrian, what are you playing right now? And what gives your rig? I mean, you've got a super rig anyway, so which munches through anything. But
yeah, well, funnily enough, segue into, I just wrote yesterday an article about the best PC games of ray tracing to try out. So there's a few in there that are worth doing if you've not tried them already. And that's obviously Cyberpunk 2077. Dying Light 2 was a solid favourite of mine for a while. Red Dead Redemption looks incredible, especially on the super ultra wide monitor that I'm playing on. So I've been really getting into that. And God of War also got re-released and on PC with that upgrade for ultra wide as well. So that looks great.
How does God of War actually run on a higher end PC? I mean, it works. Obviously, it came out on the PlayStation 4, so the PS5. Does actually run it at a higher frame rate than its original release. So how does the PC version compare?
Yeah, it's been upgraded now. It supports 21:9 widescreen, but also up to 8K in the graphics. I've been running on super ultra wide, which you can do with a workaround, which is 32:9. So that's really, it looks really good, actually. Very nice looking game. And obviously graphic overhaul for a game that's a little bit older.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Sony's been releasing quite a few games of late. Death Stranding came out, didn't it? The Uncharted trilogy. So Sony is properly that in a way, that's an analogy to PC gaming for me, is that traditionally console only publishers and studios are now looking at it as a serious proposition. So any other games, Luke? Any other games that you would recommend and why?
I think I've talked about it a little bit before, but I think one of the things that you can't get on a console but you can with PC is the kind of esports competitive experience with titles like CSGO and Valorant, where it's pure keyboard and mouse shooter action, which is so much more fast-paced and intense than it is on a console. So I think if people are coming from console and they want to try something completely different, that's one of the good places to start, in my opinion.
And the joyful thing about PC gaming as well is you get the early access games on Steam, so games that don't make it to console or sort of where PC becomes the beta test area for them. So I've been playing a game called Ready or Not, which is a five-person tactical police shooter, so you have to go into various locations and rescue hostages and do bomb disposal and things like that, and it's great fun, and it's really intense, and it's great looking, but people keep asking, is this on console? And it just isn't at the moment, but there is a chance in future that when it becomes a full release and gets more updates, that it will eventually make it to console, and then obviously people will be happy about that. But seen quite a few of those sorts of games over the last couple of years.
Of course, PC games or PC gaming rig is synonymous with strategy games as well, which is something that always struggle when they make that transition to console, mainly because a decent Civilization or something of that ilk needs a lot of keys, and it's very difficult to navigate the screen on a full-fledged simulation game on a console. Do you have any personal preferences in that kind of genre?
it's not a massive genre that I'm into, to be honest, but a lot of my friends are horrendously addicted to Factorio, which is like a massive factory building game that looks very complicated, and Crusader Kings they're always on as well, but for me, yeah, it's a bit much.
Sadly, it's probably my genre most of all, in the fact that the first game I always go to when booting up my laptop is Football Manager. Almost every single time. Just I love the whole idea of just wading through complicated spreadsheets on a daily basis in terms of entertainment. But that's one thing. Now we're going to turn to future games that aren't released yet, and ask you about games that you might be looking forward to and you might have on your wish lists. So, Adrian, is there any PC game you've got your eye on that might be coming up for the rest of 2022 or beyond?
Well, we've got a whole list. There's a whole article on this with all of them in. But, I mean, I'm particularly excited for Sniper Elite, the next Sniper Elite game. I think that's going to be a great one. I'm looking forward to shooting Hitler again, so it's always going to be a good bit of fun. And then Skull and Bones, it recently looks like that's got some leaks online and should be on the horizon finally, so pretty into that. I think that's going to be good as well. But Saints Row is the other one I'm waiting for, which isn't till August, it looks like, at the moment. So, but I've had a lot of fun playing co-op with my friends on previous Saints Row games, so I'm really looking forward to the stupid action in that one.
Luke, any games that you've got your eye on in the future?
One that I'm absolutely desperate to leave early access, kind of going back to what Adrian says before about early access titles on Steam, Baldur's Gate 3, which has been in early access since I think autumn 2020 or something, and I don't even think it's going to come out fully this year, but I played a little bit and it felt very unfinished, and I've been holding off until the full game's finished so I can play it properly. Yeah, very desperate for that to actually release. So yeah, that's my big one.
I agree with you, actually. I've been playing it on Stadia, and the problem with the early access build is that they keep patching it and destroying your save games.
Yeah.
So exactly. So I actually stopped playing it because I thought what I don't want is to get to so far into it and then find out I can't progress at all and have to start again. So I thought I'll wait until they actually finish the game. But yes, very much looking forward to that one as well. So I think we'll end with a final tip on what people should be considering when it comes to PC gaming. And this time about the digital purchasing platforms. That can be a little bit confusing. So I'll leave it to Adrian to try and explain why there are multiple digital purchasing platforms.
Why?
and whether or not they can all coexist.
Oof, that's a tough question, isn't it? Well, actually, one of the good solutions to that is the Gog Galaxy browser, which lets you have all your games in one place, which I've also written a story on, but I mean, my personal preference is Steam, but obviously you also have Origin and Ubisoft Connect and other places. But I think Xbox Game Pass or the PC Game Pass is actually making life a lot better now, isn't it? Because everything's sort of lumped into there. You can get EA Play. There's rumours that the Ubisoft Plus might be coming into it as well. So you could have all your games in one place for a small fee each month, which will make life a lot easier rather than having to keep track of all these places to buy your games or where your games library is. But obviously Epic's doing good work with having free games on a regular basis, so you don't have to spend a lot of money to play PC games. You can just get one for free on the Epic store on a regular basis, so that's a bonus. I just wish Steam would do some sort of subscription based service.
Actually, Prime Gaming as well is another good place for free PC games on a monthly basis.
Free as long as you're paying for Prime.
Yeah, but you get all the other benefits anyway. I mean, I doubt anybody pays just for Prime gaming.
That is a good deal. And the extra loot drops and things you get out of there.
It's fairly unique to the PC platform, isn't it, having all of these marketplaces? Whereas, obviously, consoles are very centralized, and then Android as well is mostly through the Play Store, and obviously iOS has the App Store, but PC's got more than you can count. So it's, I suppose it's good for the consumer in that there's some competitiveness on price rather than all being in one marketplace. But it is a pain to keep track of your games unless you use something like Gog Galaxy, like you mentioned.
That said, at least you don't have to trudge down to Currys in the rain like you used to have to do in the 80s and early 90s. So
massive cardboard boxes.
Yeah, indeed. I was thinking of some of the Sierra Adventure games that came on, five, six, seven, even 10 discs. I mean, just crazy business back in those days. So lap it up, folks. You've never had it so good. And on that, I think that's it for this special edition of the Pocket Limp podcast, celebrating PC Gaming Week in association with NVIDIA GeForce RTX. I've been Rick Henderson, and hopefully you'll join us again next week for another episode. Until then, toodle pip.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author Elizabeth Gilbert about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.